Moncrief on News Talk.
In 2014, the American journalist James Foley was kidnapped in Syria by ISIS. He was eventually beheaded, with footage of the killing being posted online. Two of the people involved with the murder were captured, brought to the US and put on trial. But they weren't Syrian, they were English. And after the trial was completed, James Foley's mother, Diane, opted to meet with one of the killers, Alexander Coty. She did it in the company of her friend, the writer Colm McCann. Those meetings formed the basis for Colm's subsequent book, American Mother, which has now been turned into an opera. Colm, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
So I suppose, could you start by telling us about Alexander Coty, who's, you know, the killer of Diane's son, and the circumstances in which you first met him?
Well, the circumstances were kind of amazing. So I met Diane Foley, and she's the mother, as you say, of James Foley, the journalist who was killed in Syria in 2014. Now, his killer, or two of his killers, two of the four killers, were captured in Syria, stripped of their British citizenship, taken across to Virginia, and were due to go on trial. Alexander Coty, he copped a plea. Part of his plea agreement, amazingly, was that he would confess to conspiracy to torture, conspiracy to murder, conspiracy to hostage take, and he would agree to talk to the victims, because there were still some living victims, and or the families of victims. And guess who put her hand up incredibly bravely and said, I would like to talk to my son's killer, Diane Foley. And she said to me, would you please accompany me, because I was sort of a family friend at that stage. And her husband didn't want to go, and her children didn't want to go for fairly obvious reasons. A lot of people don't want to put themselves in that situation. And I will never forget going to that courthouse in Virginia, walking across that that big floor and a big echoing courtroom. And she stood in front of him and said, hi, Alexander, my name is Diane Foley. And they began to talk. And the talks lasted for 2 days at first, and then another day about 6 months later, amazingly.
Yeah. Now, he was, I suppose, around the time there was a bit of a depiction, because he was English, that he was kind of, you know, your usual football hoodlum type person. And did he come across as that?
I thought he was going to be. I mean, that's everything that I had read, that he was, you know, he was going to be a football thug. And no, he did not. It was immediately very different. In fact, amazingly, on the desk in front of him, he had a book, and I was dying to know what it was. And but the spine was turned the wrong way, and I didn't want to ask him. Didn't want, you know, that early on in our conversation. Eventually, he started asking me a lot about Northern Ireland, what was going on in Northern Ireland, and I was curious about this, you know, this younger Englishman in his 30s who committed these terrible acts of terror. Why is he asking about Northern Ireland? Finally, he turned the book around, and it was "Say Nothing" by Patrick Radden Keefe. You know, he was trying to figure out the politics of Northern Ireland. And it sort of went from there. He was quite a complex character.
Yeah. Now, complex in, did you know, there obviously then was a political dimension to his brain, but also a political dimension to the horrible acts he carried out.
Yes, a political dimension and a religious dimension. You know, he said he was a soldier of Islam, that he had, you know, he'd gone to fight, he'd gone to protect Islam, and that it was a war with the West, and that he had done what soldiers do in war. That was part of his defense with Diane. You know, he knew he had done terrible things, but part of it was what he would call the fog of war.
What did he mean by that?
Well, what he meant was that there were lots of different rules and regulations. You're not supposed to take a you know, a journalist. You're not supposed to take an aid worker. You're not supposed to do any of those things, even under the rules of Islamic engagement. The other thing was that Jim had actually become, technically had become a Muslim because he was praying with them. And once you do pray, you technically become a Muslim. And so another Muslim was not supposed to touch, another person of, or touch or torture another person of the faith. So there was a big fog around him capturing, him torturing, him doing all these terrible things. And eventually, being part of the team that executed Jim so horrendously in the desert, you know, you and I both remember that day when that image came across the wires and him in the orange jumpsuit in the desert. I'll never forget it.
Mm-hmm. Now, even from what you've said there, there's a kind of a mental gymnastics going on there, perhaps on the part of Alexander in perhaps when he was talking with Diane and you, that he was trying to make sense of it in his own mind, or did he feel he already had?
That's a good question. I mean, he was trying to make sense of it. He had I could feel the guilt coming from him, but he was coming from a time and a place which is sort of addicted to absolutes, you know, like many people these times. And he sort of wanted to cling to his version of Islam and also cling to some of his own dignity, while also saying, you know, what I did was wrong. I'm looking at the mother of the man who I killed, and you know, I want to talk to her. I want to engage with her. So they talked about Christianity. They talked about forgiveness. They talked about war. They talked about children. At one point, he slid the photograph of his own three children who were in Syria across the table to Diane, and she held it for a long, long time. And it was a complicated moment. But she's an incredibly tough and generous and sort of compassionate person. And so the talks themselves, on which the opera is based, they were complicated, much more complicated than I would have believed. Very little anger, a lot of sort of verbal manipulation. And then finally, tears on both sides. He cried. Huh. And she cried too. It was incredible.
Did Diane go in with something she wanted to get out of these encounters? And did she get what she expected, or did she get something she didn't expect at all?
She got what she expected. What she wanted to do was to do what her son would have done. She always said to me, my son Jim would have gone in to talk to this person. So I'm going to honor his memory. I'm going to honor his legacy, and I will talk to him. But I also want to tell this man about what he took from the world. I also want to tell him about Jim's life. And you know, she wanted to talk about the moral courage that Jim showed, you know, in being a journalist, in telling other people's stories. And then amazingly, Sean, at one stage, she looked him in the eye and she said, I think that you two might have been friends. And that was it was really extraordinary. And in the deep end, I don't think it's given too much away, there was a moment of compassion and a coming together where they actually shook hands. It was the first time they touched, of course. It was during COVID, and there were lots of things that were going on. But of course, he was a prisoner. He's in shackles around his ankles. But the very, very deep end, when she was saying goodbye to him and he was going off to prison for the rest of his life, 23 and a half hours a day in a jail cell, she extended her hand and he took it, and it was amazing.
My word. Now, in writing a book about it, American Mother, obviously an area, you know what you're doing there, you're controlling the tone, turning that into an opera tonally. I assume that's something you wouldn't have as much experience with. Was that a bit of a challenge?
You're assuming correctly. I mean, I feel terrible admitting to this, but I really knew nothing about opera. But I had a feeling that I could write a libretto in the sense that I thought it was akin to writing a sort of epic poem, because there's a great story there. There's a lot of drama, you know. Mother meets son's killer in a room. They both talk. They both spar verbally. And then I could bring the son back as a ghost. He comes back into the opera as a ghost. And there's a prison guard there as well. Now, but I honestly did not know all that much about the rules of opera or how to engage with libretto. I learned on the fly, and I had a good teacher in the composer. Her name is Charlotte Bray, from England. So she was a great teacher. And it turned out to be a magnificent venture altogether.
Yeah. And had you been to a lot of opera before this?
No.
So I'd like, but the kind of almost then learning the internal mechanics of the story arcs in operas, yeah, and what kind of notes you have to hit and all that kind of thing would have been entirely new to you.
That was all entirely new. But she said to me, write it as you would feel it, write it. And then, so she matched the music to what I had written. And I think that was part of the process that was, that enabled me, you know, and liberated me, because I was only dealing with the words. Now I was dealing in a sort of imagined melody that was going on in my head, and I was doing some internal rhymes and some assonance and all of this, these different things that you try to do sort of poetically speaking. But in general, you know, I was on a wing and a prayer, and in the end it turned out very well.
I'm glad to hear that. The book and the opera are both called American Mother. Colin McCann, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.